Just want to make a note before we get started. Happy birthday to Bill Bell, who will be, he admits to, whatever, 100. But I think he's really only going to be 90 next week. So, amazing. Great. 92? Marianne, you're so well preserved. Happy birthday, Marianne. Good morning. Good morning and welcome to Thursday Morning Roundtable. Thank you all for being here this morning. Everybody is so social this morning. I don't know what it is, but if I could have your attention for a few minutes because we are getting started right now, that would be great. I wanted to remind you about next week's program. We're going to be shifting our focus from the north side of the city to the southwest side, and we'll have folks from Jubilee Homes talking about several of the different initiatives that they will be doing. I also wanted to point out that I put on the table out there, and on a website we have applications for the Citizens Academy. This is a joint program of Focus Greater Syracuse and University College. It's a fall program, but we're starting to put the word out now. We actually have a couple of Citizens Academy alum in the audience. I know Stan Lindhorst is here today, and if you have any questions, he'd be glad to tell you about it. But anyway, so that's that. Without further ado, because I know there's going to be a lot more conversation and questions, we'll get right to today's program. And to introduce today's speaker, I'd like to bring up one of our newest TMR members, Ivy Biswas. Ivy is a development associate with the Central New York Community Foundation and, of course, very civically involved. Thanks, Ivy.
Thank you. I apologize. I have a cold, so it sounds a little funny. I was telling Sandra that I asked around for some funny stories about Kathy Rosito, and I didn't get very many. Everybody just said, she's so wonderful, so I'm going to tell you right now, she's very wonderful. And I spoke with her a little bit before today, and she talked about all the times that she messed up days for events that her daughter had to attend. So let's just say that we're really happy that she picked the right day to come. Now to the important stuff. Catherine Howe Rosito started at St. Joseph's Hospital in 2001 as Senior Vice President for Strategic Development and Government Affairs. In 2009, she was named Executive Vice President, and last month she was promoted to President and CEO. She has worked to improve the quality and safety at St. Joseph's, and she has also spearheaded their involvement with the revitalization of the North Side and led the renovation project to improve the Prospect Hill neighborhood. Before coming to St. Joseph's, she was the Senior Vice President of Strategy at Loretto, where she helped implement the PACE program. She is a member of the Knights and Dames of Malta, which is an international Catholic charitable relief organization, and she's also a member of Syracuse 2020, the Healthcare Association of New York State, and a board member of several healthcare and philanthropic organizations. She has a bachelor's degree in political science and economics from Lemoyne and a master's degree in public administration from the Maxwell School at Syracuse University. She lives in the town of Onondaga with her husband Daniel, and her daughter Elizabeth is a graduate student at SU. So without further ado, I'm going to present Kathy Rosito.
Well, good morning. It's nice to be home. Thank you for the very nice introduction, but I have to say, if Lee Smith were here, it might have ended a little differently. I suspect something like, nice of you to show up once every 10 years. I wanted to do a couple of things this morning. I thought it might be helpful to give some context to healthcare reform. What's going on at the national level, that macro level, and how is it affecting one community-based hospital? I think our experience is the same experience other hospitals in Central New York are having, as well as nationally, and I hope it will be helpful to you. On your table are just a few things that I brought that you can look at later on, some background information about St. Joseph's, some terms about healthcare, and as well as what's happening on the north side, and I'll reference each of those as I go forward. But before I jump in, I have a question for you. Much of the debate nationally is about improving quality in health care. Everybody has decided what they think quality in health care is. I'm interested in what you think quality in health care is. And I'm going to ask just three or four people, if you could, in a couple of words or a sentence, what do you think quality in health care means? Can I see a couple of hands, maybe? With a Jeff. Easy access and a person to listen to you when you get in the door. Well said. Not being just a number, someone noting patient-centered care, focusing on you. Yes?
Good preventative medicine as well as
care after you're ill. Okay. One more over here, maybe. Yes? During the credentialing process, picking the best possible doctors possible. Very good. Well, all of those are right answers, and there really is no wrong answer to the question. Other people might say quality and safety, outcomes, improving outcomes, patient satisfaction. I think if we asked everybody in the room, we might get a different answer. But it's an important question because we're forming a system to answer that question. I would say to you that why is it really important to even understand this national debate? Because it will change the way everyone in this room receives health care. It will change the way care is delivered in our community. It will ensure access for many people who have been denied, and it will, if time and funding allow, improve quality outcomes and coordination of care for everyone in this room. Dr. Donald Berwick, who is the new administrator of the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services, says there are three goals nationally for health care reform. Better care, and for him that means safety, effectiveness, patient-centeredness, timeliness, efficiency, and equity. Improving care for populations, people with common illnesses. Doing this while reducing the per capita cost of health care. And that's a very important one. I'm going to read it again. Providing better care, but doing it while reducing the per capita cost of health care. In Medicare's mind, that's something they call the value proposition. Better quality at the right price. And whatever happens with the national debate about the legislation, whether it stays or is overturned, that debate is really just about who will have coverage and who will provide it. The rest of health care reform will continue to march forward because the regulators, the Centers for Medicaid and Medicare Services, have a very clear strategic vision. They've been working on that vision for many years, collecting data, looking at the way care is provided and the outcomes, beginning to profile hospitals and physicians, and they now are at the point where they know what the outcomes are, they know what the cost is, and now they can begin to proceed with that reform. So the debate that you're witnessing right now is not over by a long shot. So what are some of the things that we're going to see happen nationally to healthcare providers? Well, you have to learn the new language, and I'm going to use some terms this morning that may be unfamiliar to you, but you're going to hear them increasingly in the media. First of all, the Centers for Medicaid and Medicare Services, who are driving much of the reform, would like to see established in every community something called an accountable care organization. Maybe more than one. We're not sure what it's going to look like or how many they are. But they would like to pay one regional provider to then contract for all of the health care provided in a region. And the question for us is, who will be that accountable care organization? How many of them will there be? What kind of relationship will there be across those organizations? None of us have a clear answer to that. Everyone is trying to figure out what that message is going to be so that we can react to it locally. They'd like to see those organizations created, and then they'd like to see care paid for in bundles. One payment for a procedure. Right now, nephrologists, January 1st of this year, are now bundled for the outpatient care they provide. But say, for example, they decided to bundle payment for hip surgery. What that would mean is that your hip surgery, the pre-hospital care, the hospital care, the anesthesiologist, the radiologist, the surgeon, and the post-hospital care would all be paid for in that one bundle.
Now think about that happening. What is a healthcare provider going to do if now suddenly they are at risk? They're only going to get one set payment for that hip procedure. They're going to be concerned about the coordination of care. They're going to be concerned about the outcome of the care because they don't want you bouncing back to the hospital because the care was not good. They're going to be concerned about the price of that care. They're going to want to negotiate with the radiologist and the anesthesiologist. So it's going to change everything about how that procedure is approached. Many people would say that's a good thing. Better focus on quality, better focus on reducing costs. Others would say that we're not ready to take on that kind of an experiment. We have much more work to do to get there. But the work proceeds. And then finally, they're going to work on creating new policies that encourage hospitals and physicians to more clearly align. So if you've been watching some of what's been happening in this community in terms of acquisitions of physician practices, St. Joseph's acquired the North Medical Family Practices late last year. That is about the alignment of hospitals and physicians in order to improve quality and reduce cost. And unless you're very clearly aligned economically, you can't achieve those goals. And so you will see, I think, over time, more and more alignment between healthcare providers and hospitals. We also see some messages coming from Medicare and Medicaid about opportunities to encourage physicians themselves to reach out to other providers and better coordinate care, something called medical homes. Physician practices are now being paid to be more attentive to coordination of preventative care for you. And over time, what Medicare and Medicaid would like to see happen is that in a primary care practice, there really be a view of the long haul for a patient, really looking at preventative care, treatment when there is an emergency, as well as post-care. And imagine a primary care provider following you into a long-term care relationship, communicating with your physician while you're in the hospital, being concerned about putting all of the pieces together. Oftentimes when I ask the question about what's quality in healthcare, the first thing everybody says is, would people please talk to one another? And that's what Medical Home is attempting to promote. And then finally, independence. We're seeing more and more, and watch the state budget. I think you will see more examples of this, looking for care to be provided at home and avoiding either hospital long-term care or rehab care. For example, most people who've had hip or knee replacements have gone to rehab care. In the past 2 years, that number has switched from about 90% of people going to rehab care post-surgery to now less than 20%. Within 2 years, most people will go home after that surgery and receive their rehab care delivered at home. So independence at home is another piece that I think we will promote quite heavily. So there's a goal: improve quality and reduce costs. I described some tactics to you that Medicare would like to promote: value-based purchasing, bundled payments, accountable care organizations. But there's one thing that must happen first for any of this to proceed, and that's major investment in information technology. We need electronic health records. We need computerized physician order entry. We need the ability to deliver care through telemedicine. We're very fortunate that in Central New York there now exists something called Health eConnections. It's part of the Regional Health Information Organization of Central New York. This organization is developing the IT infrastructure for data sharing. Its vision is to advance the delivery of and access to quality care, improve patient safety, and control healthcare costs in Central New York. The RIO, the Regional Health Information Organization that I'm talking about, members include Center State CEO, the Hospital Executive Council, MACNI, the County Medical Society, Excellus, a number of major employers, including CNS Engineers, Kinney Drugs, Syracuse University, Welch Allyn, Stickley Audi, all the Syracuse hospitals, most of the major medical practices and labs. In addition, the area hospitals and medical groups are also investing in their information technology systems so that they can participate in Health eConnections. As consumers, you all need to watch for an announcement over the next year that will ask you to enroll in Healthy Connections to allow that data to be accessed as you travel the healthcare system. And remember, HIPAA applies to everyone involved in the sharing of information, so the confidentiality is governed legally through those laws. I encourage you, when you hear about it, to join. That is going to be one of the primary ways in which providers can improve communications, improve the provision of care across healthcare settings in the community. So again, at that macro level, whatever happens with the legislation, healthcare reform is going to proceed. The way you receive care in this community will change quite dramatically, I think, over the next couple of years. The challenge with all of this, though, is that we need to change as well. Personally, we need to take more responsibility for our health and the recording of our health care. We need to stop smoking. We need to lose weight. We need to eat healthy. The literature all supports the best thing we can do to improve the status of health is to take better care of ourselves. And as a society, we're going to need to make choices. The cost of care will only be reduced if we understand those choices. And each of those choices could be a TMR presentation unto itself. And I'm sure during the questions we'll get into that more. So, what's that mean for a community hospital like St. Joseph's? How do we prepare for all of this? Well, St. Joseph's, as you know, was established in 1869. We're one of the oldest hospitals in central New York. And we've spent a lot of time the last couple of years really reflecting on what we needed to do to get ready for healthcare reform. And we concluded a few things. First of all, we needed to have the right strategy. And for us, that strategy started with reconfirming what our mission, vision, and values were. We spent 2 years ago, about a year, with all of our employees in small groups, talking about the history and the culture of the organization and revisiting our mission. It's a very long process. Some of us were not sure about the value of the process. We are all very clear about the value of the process now. We have a new mission statement. It is, we are passionate healers, dedicated to honoring the sacred in our sisters and brothers. Very brief, very passionate mission statement. Every employee at St. Joseph's knows that mission statement, knows the values connected with it, and is now in the process of developing a passport that they will carry every day that reflects on what their responsibility is related to that mission statement. Now, why did we conclude that was so important? Well, think about the way you want healthcare delivered. What's important to you? It's that connection with the provider. It's the way you're treated. It's the quality of what's delivered. And if you're not very clear about the mission and the values of what you're doing, you can get lost in the paperwork, lost in the day-to-day busyness of healthcare. So for us, we started with mission, vision, and values. We are also engaging our medical staff differently. Typically, the hospital made decisions, the physicians made decisions. We felt it was very important that we align. So we have put in place a new structure in our organization where I consult the physicians on a weekly, monthly basis about the strategic decisions we're making and present to them almost as if I would to a board and ask for their input before we go forward. It's really revolutionized our relationship with our medical staff. We're expanding primary care access. I talked about the acquisition of the North Medical Practices. Think about it. At the very time we're expanding coverage, expanding access to health care, what's happening to the primary care base in this country? About a third of our physicians are within retirement age in primary care. If you look at who's going into primary care in medical schools, it's been going down by just about 25% a year. Most medical students are choosing specialties over primary care. And part of the reason for that is the average primary care resident graduates with $300,000 in loans to take a job that perhaps pays $150,000 to start. So we have a real imbalance in what we're doing to attract people to primary care. And so you will more and more see many of the primary care practice, primary care physicians, be employees of health systems or hospitals. St. Joseph's currently employs about 120 physicians, about 80 clinical affiliates. We expect those numbers to continue to grow. What's good about that, again, is that very clear alignment. What's not so good about it is for physicians who've practiced very independently all of their careers, it's a very big change in how they work. And finally, as part of the strategy, we decided we needed the right nursing model. And we're very lucky to have a very young, very dynamic nursing chief nursing officer, Anne Marie Chiz. Anne Marie has brought to us a model called relationship-based care. I encourage you to Google it and read about it. But relationship-based care is the primary care nursing model. Some of you would remember the days when we had public health nurses who would be responsible for a case. Well, in our system, we're going to a model where there will be one nurse responsible for a patient, very connected to that patient, helping coordinate the care, communicate with the rest of the medical care providers. We're in the process of learning and training and rolling out primary care nursing in our organization. And accompanying primary care nursing are something called unit-based councils, where that primary nurse is able to access a team of professionals from physical therapy to the lab to x-ray and coordinate care. And we're very excited about the change that's going to bring to nursing at St. Joseph's. We already have a great nursing force, as you know, because we have the magnet designation. This is going to take it to the next level. So having the right strategy was core to us. And secondly, having the best people possible. We have a College of Nursing that has about 385 students, could have many more. Nursing has again returned as being a profession that people are seeking to move into. We now have students not only during the week, but on weekends. We have students who work a full-time job and then come every other weekend to go to school for 2 years. We literally have people who come 2 hours to attend that weekend program. So we're delighted about the success of that. We also have two residency programs at St. Joseph's. We train most of the family physicians in Central New York. We have about 450 graduates of our family medicine program. Our goal now is to make sure they no longer leave Central New York, but they stay here. So we're very lucky. Margaret Martin's here this morning, head of our foundation. Our foundation raised resources and put in place the funds for us to be able to pay loans, a portion of the loans for family physicians to encourage them to stay in the community, and we're very excited about that loan forgiveness program. And then finally, job training and support for our workforce. We have done some very unique things. We know that a job at St. Joseph's includes benefits and includes tuition to go on in your career. We do everything we can to encourage our employees to be thinking about professional development. If you come in as a security guard, why not think about going to the College of Nursing? We had that happen last year, and that security guard is now a nurse in our emergency department. And now the question we're asking is, when are you going to go get your master's degree? We will pay for our employees to not only get an associate's degree, a bachelor's degree, a master's degree, and a PhD. And we do have 8 PhD-level nurses in our organization. So the right strategy, the right people, and then finally, the right facilities. And if you have a chance later, you might want to take a look at the two storyboards that I brought with me. One is a picture of what the new construction is going to look like, and above it is a vision for what the north side might look like. When we started the process of looking at our facilities, it became very clear to us that as a rather frugal organization, we had not invested in many years in our facilities. We really put our resources into people and programs and not buildings, but it was time. And so developed a strategic plan that we felt was important to position us for the future. What you see if you drive around the north side of the hospital is the first part of the project. A new emergency department, a new psychiatric emergency room, a new chest pain center. We'll be open October 1st of this year. When that part of the project is completed, we begin the big part of the project, which is the taller building, and that will be new operating rooms, new critical care centers, and we will begin to move to private rooms throughout the hospital. There will be 60 rooms in the new tower, but then we will begin to go back and convert the remaining rooms. And for us, that's really important to part of this issue of quality in health care. We believe very strongly that private rooms encourage healing, prevent infections. It's our intent to make sure that equipment, as much as possible, is outfitted in a room so it does not move from room to room. We've had a great relationship with Welch Allyn looking at how we can have blood pressure cuffs, for example, that you get when you come into the hospital, and we don't use different blood pressure cuffs. Everyone has their own disposable blood pressure cuff. And other things are stationary in the room, so equipment is not being moved from patient to patient. Also to allow families to be part of the healing environment. We have double rooms right now, and when you get a couple of big families in, there's no room for the equipment. So we set about putting in place a plan to complete those facilities. What we have under construction on the north side right now is the largest green construction project in the Northeast. We were very lucky to have had the expertise of ESF in this community, who really inspired our staff to think about how to incorporate as much of the green research as possible. So when you look up North Salina Street next year, you're going to see green vegetative roofs on the top of those buildings. It's part of the runoff system that's been designed, and in effect, the underground system that's put in place as part of this project will prevent runoff into Onondaga Lake. So it's all tied to the community strategy around improving the environment. We are also looking as part of this project to make sure that we engage the community around us. When we finished our new office building and parking garage a couple of years ago, we really had a discussion about, do we stay in the city or do we move? Very provocative discussion. We were at that point, we were about to make a $265 million investment. Do we make it here or do we move? And if you look around the country, many hospitals have moved to the suburbs. Easier. More parking, less cost, less taxes. And our sisters and our board and our senior staff made the decision, we're staying. We had the discussion, we're staying. But can we make that kind of investment without looking at the community around us? And I think at the time we had that discussion, it was maybe a little bit more self-interest. You know, let's make our neighborhood look better so our hospital looks better. But as we've gotten into the project, I think it's really transformed our thinking about the responsibility of an institution to the community around it and how you can use an institution to really be a catalyst for change. I can tell you today that our employees, our physicians, our staff are really proud of the effort, and it's really engaged them in thinking more about the city and their responsibility as well. So very quickly, to say to you, there are really three parts to that community strategy as part of this master facility plan: improving the housing in the neighborhood, improving the businesses in the neighborhood, and connecting jobs to people who live in the community to the hospital. In terms of improving housing, if you've seen the construction on Townsend Street, we're very lucky to have two organizations in this community, Housing Visions and Home Headquarters, who've worked with us. The construction on Townsend Street was done by Housing Visions with New York State tax credits. There are now 50 people living in that tax-subsidized housing, great support from the Division of Housing and Community Renewal to make this all happen. And I think we have 7 employees now who are living in that housing and walking to work. And their kids are catching the bus in the morning on the corner. It's just wonderful to watch. We've brought some people to the city who are living in the suburbs. So now we're proceeding to McBride Street, and in the McBride Street area are working with Home Headquarters. There are 20 homes that have been purchased there that will be rehabilitated as 2-family homes and available for sale back to hopefully employees as well as other people from the community, with $15,000 in grants available through SNI for first-time home buyers. So put that together with the Say Yes program, and why wouldn't you want to live on the north side? Great opportunity. And so that's the story that we will be telling our employees, and we will guarantee their mortgages as well if they make a decision to move back to the city. We as we got into the neighborhood work and the connecting, let me go back though, I wanted to mention one last thing. So housing, neighbor work with the businesses in the community. Dominic Robinson, who works for Center State CEO, is at Center State CEO, but we are contracting for his position. St. Joseph's is subsidizing that position so that we have someone who gets up every day and eats, sleeps, and breathes working on this neighborhood work. We've now created something called North Side Up, the North Side Urban Partnership, that brings together St. Joseph's, Catholic Charities, and many of the North Side efforts under one umbrella to try to advance this work. An example would be they've worked to business grants to help the businesses in the neighborhood do a facelift. So some of the painting you've seen going on with the signage and the front doors of the businesses is part of that effort. And then finally, working to help develop jobs in that area. 2 years ago, Dominic was able to run something in the community called the Green Train. 15 neighborhood and refugee residents were trained in green construction. 4 of them are now working on the construction project at St. Joseph's for Huber Brewer. So that, again, that connectivity. This summer, they will be running the health train, which will, again, recruit people to be trained for health care positions. We always have entry-level positions available, and we want to make sure that, as we have done with other refugee populations, the newest waves, as well as neighborhood residents, have the access to those positions. So out of this construction project came this additional community work. I would note to you that our hope for the future is that when you live and work on the north side, the quality of life, the greenness, the parks, the schools, all are at the level that we would want them to be in our own communities. And so a lot of conversation now is around what could the future look like? What could we do to really help Pompeii School become an international school? What could we do to develop a human service infrastructure on the north side? It doesn't exist like it does in other areas of the city, and we're very concerned about some of the problems we've seen develop on the north side where there is not a family center, there are not the resources that people can tap into. What can we do to really capitalize on the diversity that's come to the north side from many communities, many populations? We've really become a global community on the north side. And if you come to the hospital, over the course of the year, 125 languages will be spoken. And we know because we access language services and we keep track of it. But we have Sudanese, Somalian, Bantu, Burmese, many wonderful countries. And how do we take advantage of that? How do we really capitalize on that diversity? So, since 1869, St. Joseph's has served this community. And while we have a bigger footprint today, not just on the north side, but in the north of the county as well as south of the county and east, while we have a bigger footprint, the values upon which we were built have not changed. We're committed to meeting the challenges and opportunities of healthcare reform and being a catalyst for our neighborhood and our region. And now I hope we can get into the interesting part, your questions.
Thank you, Kathy. I know we will have a lot of questions. As you work to improve the neighborhood on the north side and your efforts are focused there, and you're thinking about the community and more things that can be done, are there things that outside the neighborhood that would help you? I'm thinking in terms of the city or, you know, the greater county, that sort of beyond your purview, but that would help you in your efforts.
Thank you. And, you know, I probably did not do the best job describing all the partnerships this morning, but I was a little concerned I was doing too many lists of things that are included with all these projects. But this has really been a very collaborative effort. The hospital being a catalyst would not have worked if Housing Visions and Home Headquarters and the City of Syracuse and New York State and the county and all of the regional representatives hadn't jumped on board and said, you know, this makes sense, there's an opportunity here. So I can only encourage those of you that are in positions of leadership in the community to take a look at the north side and what's been going on, because it has in some ways been neglected in terms of human service planning. And with the attraction, again, of many new cultures to the area, I think it's time for us to revisit what's available there.
Good morning. I'm really encouraged by your vision of a healthcare reform that's going to happen almost irregardless of the national legislation. And I don't know if too many people have heard that it's been kind of ongoing, because you only hear the discussion that's going on. And I also am encouraged by the fact that you talk more about that it's truly a community hospital, and you emphasize both words, community and the hospital part. My question is twofold, and that goes to the first piece being, you've mentioned that Medicare and Medicaid as kind of driving, what's the organizations or whatever, for the healthcare. So it's going to happen no matter what. I wonder how much of the military, whether it's TRICARE, TRICARE for Life, or the VA, is part of that impetus. And the second thing is how critical in the national legislation is those 30 million people that need to be covered and paying insurance to make this all happen.
Let me take the coverage issue. I think there is much debate about the right to health care access, right to health care coverage. I think as an organization, we believe very strongly that people have a right to health care. We have a number of community-based clinics. The Westside Family Health Center over on the west side, the Maternity and Early Childhood Center on North Salina Street, a Family Medicine Center on our main campus. Those centers primarily serve Medicaid enrollees. But on North Salina Street, the Sisters of St. Francis run a clinic called the Poverello Clinic. And the people who go there are people who don't come to our clinics because they have no coverage. They may have had some issues in the system over the years, and so they are on the fringes. They are packed every time that clinic is open. And the people who go there are very seriously ill. They have lots of problems. They have a right to be part of the mainstream of the healthcare system. And so I think that that debate will continue. There are always going to be some people who are not part of the system by choice. But the more people we can provide coverage to, the better. And so we're going to try to expand our primary care capacity, assuming that that coverage expansion is going to take place. In terms of the federal system, I don't know how much the VA is driving it, but I think there are some answers and solutions in the VA system. They have done a wonderful job over the years developing that IT infrastructure. They have some wonderful models of care, and I'll use the example end-of-life decision-making. They have a physician named Dr. Daniel Tobin in their system who's developed some wonderful research about critical conversations with patients about making end-of-life decisions. So I think that the VA has done a good job in some very selected areas, providing some things that we should look at as we go forward in healthcare reform.
I believe there's a consortium in place of the various hospitals, and I think St. Joseph's probably a part of that. How does that work, and are the hospitals trying to develop some kind of specialization of care between them?
That's one question I didn't prepare for, so let me think about this for 30 seconds. The Hospital Executive Council that you're referring to does include all of the Syracuse hospitals. It's a great place for CEOs to talk about issues in the community, potential solutions. A good example is CPEP, our psychiatric emergency room. We are involved with University Hospital. We run CPEP, but they share in the deficit, in covering the deficit with us. Rather than having a CPEP at every hospital, it's located at St. Joseph's and, again, funded by two of the hospitals. So that's an example of where it works really well. We spend a lot of time looking at the data related to flow in the community. We know, for example, when Ailey Memorial Hospital closed, most of that business was anticipated to go to Oswego. Most of it is now coming to the Syracuse marketplace. So we do a lot of analysis.
There is there are some regulatory restrictions about what we can and cannot talk about at that table, so we have to be careful. There is much federal legislation that prevents sometimes the kind of collaboration and communication that you would anticipate could happen in a community. And again, I think we're going to see some reform of some of those rules to allow that to happen. For example, our loan forgiveness program, we can only use in practices that are part of the St. Joseph system. We could not provide that to a family physician in a small two or three person practice out, you know, in the southern tier who wants to recruit, because that's considered buying referrals, and we're not allowed to do that. So it's tricky, but we try to have those conversations that help in advance solving community.
Kathy, Governor Cuomo has named a new, or I guess the first, state Medicaid director. And I believe your former colleague, Jim Introne, is Governor Cuomo's point person for Medicaid reform. And they're working right now, I understand, on a plan, a report that's due out within the next month or so on how the state can deal with rising Medicaid costs. Do you have any insights into that state reform process? Do you have any other hopes or thoughts about what might come out of that?
We're very excited, particularly because Jim's in the position he's in, so we have a friend from Syracuse there. But for about 2 years, Haney's, the Hospital Association of New York, has been working on developing examples, ideas of ways we could reform Medicaid, things that happen that add cost, unfunded mandates, things that just make no sense in the way we deliver care, and not only are not good quality, but they increase the cost. So there is now a group that's come together. Those all ideas are all being put on the table. I actually have sent an email out to our medical staff saying, need your ideas. This is the opportunity that we've been waiting for to really try to bring some better quality to how the state Medicaid program is run. My guess is that we will see more of something that looks like managed care around the Medicaid program. We may see some organizations taking on risk for portions of the Medicaid population, perhaps those who are in long-term care facilities, perhaps those with mental health diagnoses, and the organization will take on the responsibility for that population and bear the risk of managing that population. So more to come, but I think most of us in healthcare are doing this, very, very hopeful that we're finally going to see some reform of that program.
Hi, Kath. I think in the past we've had an abundance of nurse practitioners in the area, and we used to have three programs that prepared them. I believe today now we only have one. And we continue to talk about the shortage of primary care providers. I think this is a very underutilized group of people. And I know St. Joe's has nurse practitioners. What are you doing to increase the utilization of nurse practitioners for primary care?
I guess I would tack on to that also physician's assistants, if that makes sense.
Yeah. We employ now about 80 clinical affiliates, nurse practitioners and physician's assistants. I expect that number to continue to double over the next few years. Very, very important, in they're the glue in the system. They provide the communications. They pull the pieces together. They oftentimes are out there solving some of the problems that are not quite clinical, but are part of that frail older person's makeup that need to be attended to. Very, very important. And in healthcare reform, they are very much envisioned as providing primary care. I think we will see the emergence in this region of perhaps minute clinics, physicians in nurse practitioners in pharmacies associated with physicians. I think you're going to see them more and more utilized throughout the system. And as we have a crisis with the availability of physicians, they're going to be reserved more for the more complicated, the more critical care. And I think more and more of us will get our basic primary preventative care through those clinical affiliates. We find them to be an absolutely indispensable resource in our system.
Kathy, do you have any comments on the county's thoughts about privatization of the Van Dyne operation?
You know, I think I would say to you that I'd like to answer that question by talking about long-term care resource availability. I am not an expert these days on the finances of Van Dyne, but I would say this to you. We have a crisis developing in this community in terms of long-term care. We have more and more people aging. We have 25 people today at St. Joseph's on something called alternate level of care. They are primarily people with dementia and behavioral problems who we cannot get a place for. We cannot get them to leave the hospital. And not that we don't want to care for them, but at a point, being in the hospital is not good care. You need to be in an environment where you're ambulated, you're receiving the support that a long-term care provider can make available. And very, very concerned about what's going to happen going forward. So whatever the solution for Van Dyne, we need to preserve those beds in this community. We cannot afford to have any more nursing homes close in this community. We are still trying to recover from the closure several years ago of about 100 beds.
Kathy, I have a question for you about whether or not there are any restrictions. Given St. Joe's affiliation with the Catholic Church, are there any restrictions on the type of care that you can give? And I'm thinking, or not give, either end-of-life issues or women's health issues that just because of your affiliation are restricted more than in other hospitals?
St. Joseph's is affiliated with the Sisters of St. Francis. We've been sponsored by them since 1869. We are very proud of that sponsorship. We're very proud of our affiliation with them. We in no way see that that hinders or prevents us providing quality care in this community. As I mentioned to you, we have several community-based clinics. If it were not for our community-based clinics, there would be no access to care for those people. We certainly have beliefs and ethical and religious directives that say to how we provide care that it must be done in a way that respects individuals, respects life. And so there are a few things that we do not provide care for, but they are a very small part of what we do in this community and what Catholic health care does in this country. Catholic health care in the United States is one of the largest providers of care for those populations that can't access care. So I'm happy to have the discussion about ethical and religious directives, but it's a very complicated discussion. There is very little that we do not provide care for, and those directives allow us flexibility when there is a crisis going on to be able to respond. So,
okay, thank you.
Kathy, a new country has just emerged, or will emerge, Sudan, and I know, yes, and I know St. Joe's has been remarkable in employing Sudanese and flexibility. I think share a little bit of that with the community. I think they should know.
We've always been the hospital where refugees and new immigrants came to work, and we have been just so lucky to have had a number of Sudanese and Somalian employees over the past several years. Great story. 30 of the Lost Boys came to work at St. Joseph's. Very few of them work there now because they've gotten their degrees and moved on to other kinds of positions. They're now teachers. We have somebody in med school. We have somebody in law school. We have people who have gone on to, we have a couple of people running foundations and doing international work in support of Sudan. They come back to visit now after they've been in Hollywood, you know, at some of these wonderful dinners. But it's just really a great story, and I think proof to us a job at St. Joseph's is a way out of poverty and a way into the future. We find in our patient satisfaction surveys over and over again comments about the delight people have in encountering people from other cultures as they're in the healthcare system. We always ask the question why people who have come through such strife, raised in refugee camps, oftentimes without parental support, without the right education and nurturing, How can they be as positive, enthusiastic, as patient-centered? It's really phenomenal to see the quality of the interaction between the refugees and our patients. So we're not sure what that's about. We hypothesize a lot about it. We just know we want that to continue, so we welcome them. And a little concerned, some of the recent populations that don't speak English having a little more struggle accessing the employment system, and so I think as a community we probably have some work to do to attend.
I'd like to ask how you feel about television and billboard advertising by hospitals in which various claims of awards and so on are made, and do you think that sometimes it might confuse the public? Well, I should go here because they're specialists in stroke. I mean, how do you feel about that?
It's a huge debate in healthcare, and on one side of the coin, we have people who say doctors make referrals, not billboards. So why are you advertising? On the other side of the coin, we have a public that says very clearly, I don't know how to decide what quality is. So a substitute is to know about those awards, to know about those ratings. And so you've got those two extremes. We're someplace in the middle as an organization. We don't spend a lot on advertising, but we think it's important to tell our story, for people to know what's available, to know what we are excellent at. But it is a debate, and unfortunately for us, we do not have access to the kinds of resources that we see used in other organizations, but you know, we work very hard to eke out everything we can from what we budget for marketing every year. So
there's some interest in emergency rooms and what they cause as a drain on the financial resources of hospitals. I'm just wondering what the emergency room, what the financial restrictions are or burden are for St. Joe's, which has one of the largest ERs in the area.
Emergency rooms are the one place in our society where no one can ever be turned away. And so what happens is we get many people who come to the emergency room for which care is very, very appropriate. That's exactly where they need to be, and that's the care that needs to be delivered. But we also have about 30% of the people who come through our emergency room could be served in another location, lower cost and probably better quality. We've just acquired two urgent care centers as part of the North Medical acquisition. We're very intrigued with how we're going to use those urgent care centers going forward to try to move some of what we see come to the emergency department to another setting. It also requires that primary care be available when people need it, because if it's a night or a weekend and you can't get to your primary care physician, you're going to go to the emergency room. Part of our culture is very much wanting immediate response, and sometimes going to the emergency room is not immediate response. We've so overburdened the emergency rooms that we've increased wait times and I think created problems for people who need that care. So likely the way that will be solved is higher deductibles, higher copays, economic incentives for people to seek care in settings that are more appropriate than going to the emergency room. We've tried to do a lot of education within our network, and we've not seen it work. We've just seen a continued increase in the number of people coming to the emergency department. So,
hi, I have actually kind of two questions regarding the healthy connections. Number one is, I know this can turn into a very long conversation, but what are the main reservations why people would not want to enroll in Healthy Connections? And number two, is this a program that even small medical clinics or practices could get involved in, and how easy is that, and how would that kind of take place?
And really encourage you ought to invite the Rio to perhaps be a future TMR speaker, because it's a very exciting project, and I don't want to try to answer all of the questions for them, but would tell you the intent is that every healthcare provider participate, that it be access and architecture that accesses healthcare information all over the community. And I think the only obstacle to people enrolling will be not understanding what it's going to do to improve the quality of care. So the better job we do educating the community, I think the easier that enrollment will go.
I wonder if anybody's considered the concept of busing or limousine transport from an emergency room to an urgent care place as a method of getting reducing the emergency care requirement.
We've thought about it, we've talked about it, and we run smack dab into something called TALA. Once someone crosses the threshold of an emergency department, we must provide care. We cannot turn them away. So it would require a major change in federal legislation to be able to do that, and until that change occurs, there's no opportunity for us to suggest to people to seek care in another setting.
Okay. Thank you, Kathy. Kathy Rosito, St. Joe's Hospital.